From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I ask every Illinoisan to do their part in getting through this pandemic. We've already lost too many lives. Yes, we've lost our normalcy, but we shouldn't lose hope. We'll work together, and we will prevent the spread of this virus. And we can do that by masking up, washing up, and backing up. Thank you.
It is time for us to rid this state of the unethical characters that hold office. And we need to have laws on the books that address the things that we have learned that have been taking place in our state.
How this virus can penetrate into a facility that is housing the heroes of our country is beyond me. And that's what the House Judiciary Civil Committee is going to find out.
That's the Illinois House Democrat Andre Tappetti. His committee will investigate an outbreak of COVID-19 that has proven deadly at the state-run veterans home in LaSalle. We also heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Department of Public Health Director Ngozi Ezike. The COVID numbers are showing the second wave of the disease is going strong in Illinois. And what about House Speaker Michael Madigan? He doesn't seem to be going down without a fight. We'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Government and Politics reporter. And joining us today, Rachel Hinton. She's with the Chicago Sun-Times and covers government and politics for them. And Rachel, it's good to have you on once again.
Thanks for having me.
Hannah, I'm going to go to you first because we talked about this veterans home outbreak last week. Things have gotten worse, more deaths now. I believe the death toll, as we sat down to record this program Friday morning, is up to 31. And earlier this week, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a Republican, was critical. The administration had turned down some federal help early on to get this under control. Catch us up on this situation. Where do things stand right now?
Right. So the actual outbreak, the spread within the home, has slowed down significantly, and we've only seen, additional cases in the single digits in the last week. But of course, deaths is the ultimate lagging indicator of how, a virus is spread, and we have seen the death toll uptick from 28, I think, before Thanksgiving, to 31, and that's where we stand now. And that means that an entire quarter of the 121 residents who live there in the LaSalle Veterans Home have died, and 90% of the residents have been infected. A portion of those are recovering, but by my math, 43 are still actively fighting COVID. And the situation is just, it's heartbreaking. We've been through this before. We saw, a Legionnaires outbreak during the Rauner administration at the Quincy Veterans Home. And of course that was, a huge scandal, not just in that they died from this disease, but also in the way that the Rauner administration, handled it. And, the Pritzker administration, going back to the gubernatorial campaign, candidate Pritzker was very, very critical of Governor Rauner's handling of that. And now the Pritzker administration has to follow those same laws that were, made in the wake of that tragedy. And that includes, notifying family members within 24 hours if their, resident in the home had been infected. But yeah, it's not good. This is an issue that, because you have that easy comparison with the situation in the Quincy Veterans Home, of course, they're definitely not the same. It wasn't a pandemic back then in 2015, but it's very easy to compare. And the governor, he has a lot of work to do to regain that trust. And so, the governor announced before Thanksgiving that there would be an independent investigation through the Department of Human Services Inspector General. But This week, we saw the House Judiciary Civil Committee, its chair, Andres Petty, a Democrat from Chicago, he took the extraordinary step of launching an independent investigation. And when I asked him this week, you know, how long have you been on that committee? Has that committee ever taken on an investigation like that before? And he said, no, it is pretty rare, but he felt as if that's the step that he needed to take. He felt as if it was his obligation. Now, what will come of that? We don't know. He requested a bunch of information from the facility itself and from the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Public Health. And he said that if there needs to be any hearings, he would expect that they would happen during the legislature's expected lame duck session in January.
We've been hearing a lot of questioning on the daily briefings that the governor does regarding COVID-19. He's getting a lot of questions about what's happened at LaSalle and also if anybody's being held responsible for some of the apparent missteps, at least that's what it appears to be, that may have happened there that caused this to get so out of control. And it seems as though, Rachel, that he has bristled at some of that questioning and maybe even some of the criticism he's getting, but he's going to keep getting it. I mean, this is just too big of an issue and too big of a concern out there, I think, for people on both sides of the aisle. You know, governor's under fire here a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with what Hannah was saying. And I would also say that, you know, before the Thanksgiving holiday, there were two reports released. And in those reports, it was shown or rather reported or found that at this veterans home, there was hand sanitizer that was deemed to be inadequate for handling the germs or the virus, the coronavirus. So that was one issue. There were employees who were found to not be following proper like hand hygiene or mask hygiene. Sometimes they would be gathered in, I believe, cafeterias, and their masks would be by their chin while they ate, or they would be gathering not 6 feet apart. Those two findings, you know, have come up, you know, in the questioning of the governor at his daily briefings. And, you know, Governor Pritzker has said, once those issues were found, they have been addressed. But I think people really want to understand why did this happen? Why has it gotten so out of hand? People want explanations for why, you know, now 31 veterans have died. And I think for a lot of people, it really does harken back to the Legionnaires outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home, because there's the same sort of cloud, I guess, over this of what's going on. A lot of questions, people have a lot of questions, and there don't seem to be a lot of answers right now. What comes of these two investigations remains to be seen, but I think, you know, people are really interested in this and people really want to know what's going on.
Yeah, Charlie, the governor says he wants to wait and see what the investigations show us. And I guess maybe that's a prudent way to go about this, but it certainly isn't silencing his critics, is it?
No, it's not. And I think there's a real situation going on in LaSalle. The state operates three other veterans homes, one in Anna, one in Quincy, as we mentioned, and one in Manteno. Now, Anna is down in Union County. Southern Illinois has had really off the chart infection numbers. Manteno's in Kankakee, same thing. And so has LaSalle County, where the veterans home is located. But the other veterans homes haven't had the same number of infections, the same number of fatalities. So there's obviously something going wrong or has gone wrong there at the veterans home in LaSalle. And Rachel mentioned how they had some kind of, I guess it was like liquid hand soap that they were trying to pass off as sanitizer, how the employees didn't take some of the mitigation seriously in the lunchroom. Those are the kind of things that the administration at that particular veterans home has to be on top of. And I think it's all well and good that we're going to do an investigation. It might be better if it were an investigation done by some group not part of the governor's administration, as the inspector general is, and perhaps the House committee will be able to get to the bottom of it. But the thing is, I think there's also changes that need to be made immediately. And I assume that some of them have been in place already, getting real hand sanitizer, for example, and also impressing upon the employees that you really have to follow the mitigation at all times, and not maybe when you're not on the clock and when you're out in the community, go around unmasked, go to some of the places that serve indoor dining, go to bars, that kind of thing. You have to really take this stuff seriously. And as I say, the evidence suggests that whatever happened in LaSalle showed that the mitigations weren't being taken as seriously there as they were at the other veterans institutions.
And we haven't heard of any, Hannah, you've not heard of any type of outbreaks at other facilities, other veterans facilities?
Well, earlier this year, back in the spring, Manteno did suffer a COVID outbreak and 15 residents ended up passing away. And then in August, they also saw two residents pass away from a more limited outbreak. And currently, the Quincy Veterans Home is experiencing an active outbreak. And from their latest correspondence, which I think was from Wednesday, they said there were 27 active cases, but no deaths. So, I mean, the veterans homes are, you know, just like any other long-term care facility. You know, the population who lives there, they're fragile people. And, you know, a virus, COVID or pneumonia in non-pandemic times and other things, you know, they're very, very vulnerable to any kind of illness. So you know, the governor has made the argument, well, this is a direct result of increased community spread. And for a while there, the region that the LaSalle Veterans Home, you know, it did have a pretty sustained community spread. But, you know, others have pointed out, well, you know, it's gotten into other long-term care facilities, it's gotten into other veterans homes, but it has not been this bad or this deadly. I mean, again, one quarter of the residents are now dead and 90% had been infected. So it's, yeah, I mean, they're not immune, but clearly something went wrong here.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. Well, let's turn our attention to another story that we've been talking about pretty much every week now for quite a while, and that is the powerful House Speaker, Michael Madigan. He was implicated in this Commonwealth Edison alleged bribery scheme. He's not been charged, but boy, he's getting a lot of pushback from a lot of people, including members of his own Democratic House caucus. And now a member of his leadership team, Rachel, has come out and said that she won't support him. That seemed to be kind of a monumental announcement this week. Fill us in on what took place there.
Yeah, so State Rep Kathleen Willis, a Democrat from Addison, came out on Tuesday and said, you know, after much thought, consideration, talks with family, she could not support Speaker Madigan for another term, or rather she referred to him in her letter as Representative Madigan for another term as Speaker. She is a member of the House Democratic Caucus leadership. And so that's the first leader of you know, the House on the Democratic side to come out against Speaker Madigan, or rather to say that they will not be voting for him. She is now the 19th member of the House Democrats to say that she doesn't support him for another term. Speaker Madigan, who has not been charged with any wrongdoing and maintains that he didn't do anything wrong, you know, he will end up appearing, or rather participating this weekend, tomorrow, in a speaker candidate forum that's going to be hosted by the House Black Caucus. But he currently does not have votes. If all of these people, if all 19 of these people who said that they won't vote for him, if they hold to their statements, he is 6 votes short, I believe, of securing another term. Of course, I guess the saying goes, you know, don't underestimate the speaker, don't vote against the speaker, don't bet against him. It's not clear to me right now what sort of, you know, behind the scenes sort of wheeling and dealing is going on, or if any of those 19 people may flip, you know, next month when it comes time to vote for the speaker position. But currently it looks like Speaker Madigan is whipping up votes just like any other, you know, House Democrat who wants to be speaker is currently doing. Of course, he has union support, a long history in the position. He's been Speaker of the House for all but 2 years since 1983, I believe. So obviously he's in a better position to make his case for why he should be the leader, why he should be continue to be Speaker of the House. But how this all plays out, I mean, is anybody's guess. Although I still believe that there's probably some tricks up his sleeve to help him secure another term.
What's behind this Black Caucus event you just mentioned that's taking place this weekend? And I guess people who are considering making a bid for Speaker, including Speaker Madigan, could appear there and try to lobby for support. But why is that happening right now?
I think it's partly because there is a lot of, as I said, you know, 19 members have come out and said, we want new leadership. I think only one member of the House Black Caucus has come out and said, I won't be voting for Speaker Madigan. I think that this positions him to get a good endorsement from the Black Caucus. I'm not sure currently who will also appear or participate tomorrow and throw their hat into the ring to be Speaker, or rather to run for the position. But I think that they're doing this right now as maybe a way to help Speaker Madigan to you know, come out later on and a full-throated endorsement of him. But also, you know, the vote is happening. I believe the next session starts January 13th or mid-January. So I think right now, you know, it's a kind of taking stock of who is running, who's considering a run, who do we still need to hear from? Who wants to participate? And I think that they're also trying to basically consider, you know, the road ahead and trying to be out in front of this thing instead of waiting until January 1st or 2nd or whatever, you know, and waiting for people to come to them or waiting for more people to come out. I think this allows for them to basically, you know, do a temperature check of the caucus, and then kind of be out in front of all those who want to run for this position. And then they get to have a good voice. They position themselves as, look, we've heard from all of these people. We did our research, our homework. Here's who we think is the best candidate. And I think maybe that will give whoever they decide to endorse, you know, a leg up or some standing.
Let's say it is Speaker Madigan, Charlie. Is that a nice win for the Speaker to some extent, something that could propel him, you think, amidst this entire scandal?
Well, my expectation would be that at the end of the day, after the forum has occurred, 21 of the 22 members of the House Black Caucus will endorse Madigan for another term as Speaker. And I'm guessing that part of the rationale would be they will have received assurances from Madigan that the kind of ambitious program that was developed by the Black Caucus and also by their counterparts in the Senate, dealing with some of the inequities in the system in education and employment opportunities, financial opportunities that surfaced in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement, that Madigan, I'm sure, has made a commitment that as Speaker, he will make sure that those issues are addressed. And as Rachel said, there's one member, Morris West from Rockford, who has publicly said that he will not vote for Madigan for Speaker. But I still think the most likely scenario will be that there will be another Speaker, because I don't believe that the Speaker who now, in public at least, only has 54 of the 60 votes needed. I don't see that any of the people who publicly declared against him, any of the other Democrats, are going to be able to flip unless they've decided they want to pursue some other line of work. Nor do I see any Republicans crossing over to support Madigan. So I don't see where he goes to get those extra votes. As I said before, on various occasions and various venues, what I would consider to be the optimum scenario for the Speaker would be for him to preside over a lame duck session that addresses the state's immediate difficulties budget-wise, with budget cuts, with some tax increases, maybe expanding the sales tax to services to try and get us on sounder footing heading into the next General Assembly. And then for him to make a speech saying, well, this is my legacy. I've got us going in the right direction. I'm now going to retire and rest on my laurels or whatever, and then have a whole new General Assembly without Mike Madigan even being a member of it decide who will be the speaker among the Democrats.
Yeah, according to, well, Hannah, according to what we've been reading and hearing from different lawmakers and the rumor mill, I guess, I know that Stephanie Kifowit was one of the people that had announced might seek this position. But have we heard from about anybody else at this point?
No. You know, at this point, honestly, it feels like it's very, very close, this, you know, mid-January deadline. Or, you know, the date that the new General Assembly would be sworn in and must select a new speaker. But there's a lot of work ahead, and there, you know, by anyone who wants to make a serious run for a speaker. And so the folks I've been talking to say it's honestly way too early to tell. But, you know, regarding Stephanie Kifowit, I don't think she has much support behind her. I mean, back in, I think it was early October when she first came out and said she was going to run against Speaker Madigan. You know, she didn't have anyone standing on her side, by her side. And also, I mean, she, in the wake of this LaSalle Veterans Home outbreak, folks had asked her to be more proactive. Obviously, the House can't have its own virtual hearings because they did not vote on that in the spring, or at least they voted that portion down. But, you know, there's the kind of a sense that she, as the chair of the House Veterans Committee, could have at least been doing more to, you know, respond to this crisis. So I, and just in general, she's just not the most popular person in that caucus, to be frank. And so there are other options out there. And I'm not sure that we, you know, it's going to be a while till we know a solid group of who is actually in the running in a very serious way.
Well, I guess one surprise name that popped up this week, Rachel, I saw this in your reporting, was Jim Durkin, the Illinois House Republican leader, saying he could, of course, get all of his Republicans to vote for him. That still leaves him quite a bit short, but that he was hoping to maybe lobby a few Democrats. Is he serious about that?
I believe so. Yeah, he said he's going to work on appealing to 15 reform-minded Democrats. This was the, I believe, Tuesday. This was the day that the four, a close Madigan confidant, as well as three others, two from ComEd and then one, Jay Doherty, who was the former president of the City Club, when they were indicted. At a press conference after that, he said that he's also lobbying for this position. He seems to think that he has the votes, or rather he'll be able to get the votes. Everyone I've talked to and everyone I've seen talk about it online, on Twitter, wherever else, believes that he is a long shot for that job.
Charlie, you'd agree a long shot's the right word?
I would say long chance is probably extremely optimistic. I said before the show, as you guys recall, I think the chances are greater that I will be the starting pitcher for the Chicago Cubs on opening day than Jim Durkin will be the next Speaker of the House. Think about it for a minute. Who are the people who said they will not vote for Madigan? By and large, they tend to be progressive people. Now, are they going to flip and put a Republican in charge when you look at what the Republican agenda has been on issues of importance to working people? The Republicans are on record as being anti-labor. Is that what I, as a progressive, if I'm one of those people, are going to say, oh, yeah, well, I want him to be the speaker. I want him to be the guy in charge of naming the majority on all the committees. I want him to be the guy who has the majority on the Rules Committee, who decides where bills are sent or whether they're even heard. No, that's just not going to happen.
Well, Charlie, is that, and just about a minute and a half here, but I wanted to get your thoughts on, have we ever seen something like that before, where a Republican, at least in recent memory, where a Republican tried to circumvent those rules a bit and become the speaker?
Yeah, I can't. In my time of watching this, and, you know, recent memory, I guess, is different for me than for you. Back in 1975, the last time there was a real battle for control of the House, there were several Republicans who ultimately voted for the Democrat who became Speaker, Bill Redman. But the Democrats had a majority. They just couldn't unite behind a single candidate. There were certain people, Democrats, who held out in support of the leading candidate when the voting began, a guy named Clyde Schoedt, who was from Anna, coincidentally, in Southern Illinois. I think the last time Republicans before that helped make a speaker was in the 60s, early 60s, I believe, when Paul Pyle was elected speaker with Republican votes. But I don't think there's ever been a time when Republicans needed to get Democratic votes to be speaker. But then the Democrats were in the minority for the first three quarters of the 20th century.
Right. Well, we'll see how this plays out. We've got time certainly to watch over the next month before, as was mentioned, it looks like January 13th will be the date to circle on your calendar for the speakership and those positions being elected. Now let's move on to our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's go to you first.
Sure. Well, you know, if there is no resolution to the question of who will be House Speaker, the I believe the Constitution stipulates that Secretary of State will preside over the chamber until that decision is made. And that, of course, is Jesse White, probably the most popular politician in Illinois. But, you know, this is going to be his last go round in the job, or so he says. We already had that one time when he said he was going to retire and then he didn't for the 2018 election. Anyway, we now have two interested Democrats in the position for the 2022 election. So Alexi Junilius, who had been state treasurer, gosh, what was it, 10 years ago? And then Karen Yarbrough, who is a former state rep, and I believe she's a now Cook County clerk. So that's two interested Democrats. Just goes to show that the elections just keep coming.
Charlie?
Well, in the area, I guess, of not real news, the State Board of Elections on Friday certified that Joe Biden was the presidential winner in Illinois and thus will get our 20 electoral votes. But it was also interesting, I thought, that they said that the turnout of 6.1 million voters was at 72.9%, which is the highest turnout since 1992, when it was at 78%.
And Rachel.
Yeah, former Senator Iris Martinez was inaugurated this week in her new role as clerk of the Circuit Court of Cook County. So her resignation from the Senate now kicks off the question of who will replace her there, which means that some Cook County Democratic Party committee people will soon be gathering in a room to pick a replacement. She says that that meeting won't happen for a few weeks, probably mid-December, but now all eyes kind of turn to that. Not all, but many eyes now turn to who will take her seat in the state Senate.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. Get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.